This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. And we're streaming online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. On the program this afternoon, we're going to talk about food and how to get a wholesome, tasty meal on the dinner table without a lot of fuss. Our guest is Beth Hensberger. She's a James Beard Book Award-winning cookbook author, and her latest book is about weeknight cooking. Beth Hensberger is the author of more than one dozen cookbooks, including The Bread Bible, for which she won a James Beard Award. Her new book is Not Your Mother's Weeknight Cooking. It follows three best-selling Not Your Mother's Slow Cooker cookbooks. The series updates classics and offers new recipes while aiming to use fresh, seasonal foods. She says what she wants at the end of a busy day is, in her words, a healthy, delicious meal that is budget-conscious, is easy and quick to prepare, and contains a minimum of processed foods. So in this book on cooking for weeknights, she focuses on meals we can make in 45 minutes or less. The book includes 150 recipes, including recipes for such dishes as ratatouille tortilla pizzas, fried rice with tofu and vegetables, and Hungarian paprika chicken. Listeners, I look forward to your telephone calls this afternoon. Your questions and comments are invited. How do you get dinner on the table at the end of a busy day? Join us with a telephone call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, give us a call at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Beth Hensberger's new book, Not Your Mother's Weeknight Cooking, Quick and Easy Wholesome Homemade Dinners, is published by the Harvard Common Press. Again, the phone numbers, we look forward to hearing from you. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Beth Hensberger, thanks so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm great. We're at the end of a heat wave out here in California, but
I was wondering about that.
I'm still testing recipes.
Well, because here today it's on the raw side. We've had some rain, it's cloudy, it's breezy, and it's 45 degrees.
Well, you'll get our heat soon.
Yeah, okay. Well, in the meantime, I was thinking, actually, it was funny because I said to Harriet Williamson, our producer, I said, you know what, I'm thinking a warm soup from Beth's book tonight for dinner. And I said to Harriet, I bet she's thinking about gazpacho.
Or Cobb salad.
There you go. That's nice and cool and refreshing, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what led you to the topic of cooking weeknight dinners?
Well, you know, it really, a lot of my cookbooks are appliance-driven.
That's true.
And, of course, they're efficient, but they take a little bit more time. And you have to be around. Except for the slow cooker, there's certain meals you can start early in the day and they're done at night. But most people come in hungry and have to put something together immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And this came out of that. Frankly, I wrote this book for myself.
Yeah?
I really did. The book is just filled with the things that I make, my family makes for years. Decades.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of good friends who are good cooks, too.
Yes, I'm very lucky. I like to eat with them all the time.
Yeah.
Then I don't have to cook, because if I test all day, I like to be waited on. Obviously, the 30-minute meal genre has become very big. Also, with the economic restrictions, people are eating at home more.
Yeah.
And because I personally don't use processed foods, my whole cooking style is sort of fast food, but all with stuff out of my pantry.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, you avoid processed food, and that's what you just said, but you do make use of convenience products.
Mm. And there's good ones.
Yeah.
I mean, who can live without marinara or frozen vegetables, especially frozen artichoke hearts and peas? Those are like the best. Although the Trader Joe's now, that they have lines of frozen vegetables that you would never even have considered, all sorts of mixtures and things that are very, very good and very convenient, especially if you don't have time to chop, because you think, well, why would I buy a bag of frozen multicolored green peppers, green, yellow, red peppers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so easy to slice one up. But sometimes that slicing is just too much.
Yeah.
Especially if you're hungry. And whether you're a single person or you have a family, you know, the whole handling, feeding yourself every day, it's something that everybody has to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think people have gotten very used to eating out. And when you think of it, I always, like when I tell people, don't eat more than one meal a day out. Now, a lot of people are really, really together, and they have some sort of breakfast at home, pack their lunch, or pick up a salad or something, and then make their own dinner. But amazingly enough, a lot of people don't do that. They'll catch something, fast food at lunch or something. Single men are notorious for eating all meals out.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to slant this book toward somebody who was just starting to cook, somebody with a family, or that, you know, single person who thinks, oh, well, it's not worth cooking because it's just me.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky because, you know, here's the moniker on my book's Not Your Mother's. My mother's a fabulous cook.
Yeah.
And she lives alone. And every night she sets the table. She says it's civilized. She says it's better for your mental state
mm-hmm.
to set the table every night and make a nice meal.
Yeah, I agree
and
with your mom.
And many of the recipes in here are ones that she makes, like the ravioli with the peas and mushrooms. We've been making that since the 1980s.
Yeah. So how did you come by this moniker, Not Your Mother's?
Really, my publisher did.
Yeah.
I'm so practical and kind of more artsy.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't have come up myself with something so mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
My particular publisher, Harvard Common Press is one of the last privately owned small publishing houses,
mm-hmm.
and I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very family-oriented. You end up knowing everybody that works there, and they have these meetings, and everybody chips in. I can't even tell you. I mean, there's ideas from the assistant marketing person or somebody who's, you know, doing advertising. You know, everybody chips in, and I really like that. I really enjoy that feeling because in a very large company, you don't get that.
Yeah. Also, this press has been very good for you, hasn't it, in terms of sales?
Well, yes. And, of course, that's reflected in that I'm speaking to a need
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I look at how I buy cookbooks, well, which would probably be different than most people because I'm looking for reference material as well. But the angle that I come from all my books is that they're not coffee table books. These are books that sit next to the appliance or right there with your couple of cookbooks on the shelf by where you cook, and they get dirty. There's spots on them because you really use them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for, and I think that's what's coming, you know, coming around, is that, you know, people really need to be able to feed themselves, and they're not going to do it with a restaurant recipe that's been adapted. It's just too complicated.
Mm-hmm. And if the book's got to be the right size.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my books are big. Like the Bread Machine book is 350 recipes, which I could never do another Bread Machine book. It's everything that's in me is in there in regards to the Bread Machine. And at first, I kind of bucked with this smaller size book. Again, my publisher, Bruce Shaw, he really has a marketing genius that I didn't ever see in other places that I worked. And the smaller book is easy. It's easier to hold. It's easier to keep on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to access usable recipes.
Mm.
And so now I really appreciate the format.
Yeah. How have cookbooks changed in the last 10 or 20 years? It seems that we've undergone a number of changes back and forth.
Well, not so much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been writing since 1985, and my slant has always been for the home cook,
mm-hmm.
even though I worked in restaurants and had a catering business. And maybe it's because that's just my angle. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm really looking at what's practical and tasty. Because, you know, people are not going to garnish their food. You know, I mean, you know, I love this garnish with parsley. Now, sometimes parsley does contribute to the overall dish.
Right.
But people do not. A lot of times people eat out of the pan.
Standing
over
the sink.
I mean, they don't even put it on a plate because they don't want to wash it. But they don't arrange things on a plate, and they don't garnish and make them look like a restaurant things. People just put it on the plate or put it in the bowl, and if something goes on top, like sour cream or something, they do that, and then they eat.
Yeah.
And then they wash the dish, and it's already over. So I think in the last 10 years, we went from really heavy, glossy chef books,
because
mm-hmm. everybody got really fascinated with this restaurant thing. And the bottom line is, very, very, very few home cooks tackle those recipes. They really don't.
Mm-hmm.
They really are looking for maximum flavor with the shortest amount of time with ingredients that are easily available in the supermarket.
Yeah.
And I love all this eating locally, eat within so much mileage, the organics. I love all that. But when you go to the grocery store, you tell me, what do you look for? You look for what looks good.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to buy an organic zucchini that's half rotten just because it's organic when the regular zucchini are all, you know, fresh and firm. So you have to really pay attention. Shopping is just as much a part of cooking. It's frankly almost more laborious. Because you've got to lug everything back out to the car and lug everything back into the house and sort everything and, you know, clean the refrigerator to get everything in there. But having good ingredients, the best you can afford, because I'm not going to say go buy something gourmet if you can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't cook like that. But if you have a good stock, a little pantry, canned beans. There's certain canned fruit I like canned peaches, because things that you really can't get out of season,
right?
That are best locally done. Tinned tomatoes. I mean, tinned tomatoes are just fabulous.
Yeah.
And there's so many. I don't know if you've tried these fire roasted tomatoes.
I haven't tried those yet.
Oh, they're wonderful. Just wonderful. Put it with your marinara. Just, you know, a big can of the regular and a small can of the fire roasted. Also, the fire roasted are really nice if you want to whip up a little salsa.
Yeah.
You don't always have to use the fresh tomatoes, because, like today, I wanted a salad. I went in, the tomatoes were hard.
Yeah.
You know, and it's out of season. They probably came from Chile, you know. And, you know, so I opted for something else. I opted for an avocado. You know, and mandarin oranges.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So you really have to kind of pay attention. And then what you cook is going to reflect what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have, you know, ethnic sensibilities. A lot of people from India are never going to make chicken piccata, which is, you know, in the West, just one of the most wonderful dishes. They just wouldn't, it wouldn't be spicy enough. It's just not the way that they would cook. So there's, you know, a lot. I'm pretty much a Mediterranean influenced. I grew up on Julia Child. I mean, her potato leek soup, you can never get any better than that. Just equal parts potato and one potato to one leek.
Yeah.
And not even any cream. One of the best soups I think she's ever, and then change it by adding watercress or something.
Was mastering the art of French cooking really one of your first and best loved cookbooks?
No, not really.
No?
The first Julia Child book, although I had it, because it was dense. It's philosophical and, you know, you have to be really committed. See, I was lucky again. My mother can ferret out a recipe. My mother is probably one of the best cooks you could ever imagine. Everything she makes tastes good. And I grew up like that. And we didn't go out. Matter of fact, we were just talking about this the other day. We didn't go out to restaurants. We never had Chinese food. I mean, for when I graduated from high school, I was taken out for dinner. It was something I looked forward to for 2 months. We just, you know, that's not what we did.
Yeah.
Our entire family cooked, grandparents, everybody. So, you know, I grew up on these gigantic, one side of my family's just huge, with the Catholic priest at the table, you know, huge family dinners with the pot roast. And my Hungarian grandparents were, my grandmother was a wonderful cook. And I have a whole sense memory of all these family dinners and all this good food. And then every night my mother made something from scratch, and we all appreciated it, you know. And I come from, you know, a family with five children, and my grandfather lived with us. And so I started by cooking the desserts, all the cake mixes, the puddings, even pudding. My mother had parfait, cut crystal parfait.
Mm-hmm.
Glasses,
mm-hmm.
And she taught me to alternate with the whipped cream,
uh-huh.
And then topped with a cherry.
Yeah.
So, and those would sit in the refrigerator, you know, and then brought out after dinner. So small, simple things were really special.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with a sense of style with my cooking as well. And then I did all the cake mixes and the layer cakes and all that kind of stuff. And I worked next to her in the kitchen. And I look back now as, you know, because I didn't pay attention to it at the time. I just wanted to be like her and I wanted to cook. I already had that in me. And I think, gosh, I was so lucky because that's where I got this whole base of how I look at food now, my sensibility. My mother had a very balanced palette. So it wasn't like she threw something on the table. There was always the starch, perfectly cooked vegetables, and some type of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And no in-between meal snacks. I mean, it was like very rigid. You ate at a specific time. And you don't realize that you go through your entire life, and this is your programming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do remember meeting a young man who was having a lot of trouble. I think he was 21 in his life. He was just so troubled. And a friend of mine's a therapist, and so I met him through this person. And what was his background? His mother didn't cook. The food in the refrigerator had mold in it. And instead, he just sat down and didn't eat. And it was very interesting watching, you know, we eventually put him in a situation where the food situation, he was learning to cook, and he just became, you know, a different person.
Transformed.
Yeah, because food is so important.
Well, I think it's very interesting that you begin this book by quoting Adele Davis.
I loved old Adele.
you say,
oh,
food.
That was one of my influences. That was my first, you know, foray into the health food realm.
Yeah.
She looks a little dated now if you go back. You know, she was always using brains and, you know, the strange parts of the meat,
mm-hmm.
that are very ethnic oriented, because my grandmother used to cook with all those things. We don't realize how sophisticated in America our food is.
Mm.
You know, when you travel either to third world or even to Europe, you get such a different feeling for food. But, you know, everybody wants New York steak here and the top cuts of everything because we just are not used to preparing these other things. And, of course, their acquired taste. So, but my first Julia Child book that I went crazy for was her TV show book, which I think was about her second book. And it was the collection of all her TV shows. And that's when I started making the pastry custards and experimenting with all of the things. I could read the recipes easier than the mastering.
Mm-hmm.
That was, matter of fact, my aunt gave that book to me for my 18th birthday.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Beth Hensperger is our guest this afternoon here on the program. She's the author of more than one dozen cookbooks, including The Bread Bible, for which she won a James Beard Award. Her new book is Not Your Mother's Weeknight Cooking. It follows three best-selling Not Your Mother's Slow Cooker cookbooks. In this book, she is focusing on meals we can make in 45 minutes or less, and she is focusing on fresh seasonal foods, although she is a big fan of a lot of convenience foods that are very, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a telephone call. We'd love to hear from you. Questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. I want to go back to Adele Davis and share with listeners what you say about her and food at the very outset on page one of this book. Food serves a threefold purpose, wrote nutritionist-turned-cookbook author Adele Davis in 1947, to bring delight to the sense of taste, smell, and sight, to produce health, and to produce the opportunity for artistic expression. Also a big part.
I don't think anybody has said it better since.
Yeah, that really wraps it up really very nicely. And then Julia Child has also been a big influence. And, you know, it's interesting that you mention the cookbook that you received as a gift from that was based on the recipes that she did on television, because that was aimed at a group of people who, you know, were you know, we were just kind of maybe a generation that was breaking out of their mother's cooking.
Well, I think they were breaking out of the World War II mentality.
Hmm.
You know, because there was a time where it was economically like what we're going through now. You know, when the world was at war. I mean, there were ration stamps, and there were things that were not available, and people still survived.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a whole way of cooking that came out of that World War II. Matter of fact, you know, people that I know that grew up then have sometimes a very particular style of cooking, always with the least expensive meats and not a lot of vegetables and things like that. It's kind of interesting. But Adele was already looking at more protein. Like if you remember, she always added non-fat dry milk to everything.
Huh.
And a lot of times she didn't have fresh dairy, so she always was doing the reconstituted dry milk and things like that. She had ways of boosting the nutrition that, you know, we don't pay attention to right now because we have lots of, this is like, you know, despite all everything, if you go into the grocery store and just objectively go back, I mean, we need to be really thankful.
Yeah.
You know, especially with all this economic stuff, thinking what happens if the truckers don't get there. I mean, we've seen before pictures in other countries where the shelves are almost empty. I mean, it just amazes me when I go into the supermarket and what kind of choices I have. And we tend to take that for granted because after World War II in the 1950s, everything got better without trying. And we've really, for my life, I'm almost 60 now, I've been looking at, really, my life just kept getting better without a whole lot of effort because our economy was going through this wonderful evolution of expanding. And yet every generation has their challenges to meet. Now, we really, down on the base level, are not really affected yet unless you've lost your job. And even then, a lot of people who have lost their jobs have these wonderful severance packages for like a year. So we're still able to have all this wonderful choice. So when you look at fast cooking, you're also looking at using like a modicum of ingredients, like 5 ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at when you shop, what's on special? I didn't do this when I was younger. I always look for the specials now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. I mean, there's like, you can like really have wonderful shopping experiences coming home, and you've saved a lot of money by shopping the specials.
Yeah. Let's take a call. A listener is waiting for us in Urbana on line 1. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, how are you?
I'm well.
Good.
I was wondering if the author has done much in terms of vegan cooking.
You know, I do vegetarian cooking.
Uh-huh.
And vegan is really now become a natural part of the vegetarian. Before, it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
We used to think, oh, my gosh, this is the weirdest thing. There are more vegan cookbooks than I think regular vegetarian cookbooks. For some reason, you know, it was originally politically motivated. So many people have dairy allergies,
mm-hmm.
along with their politics of not eating meat. A lot of people don't eat eggs. So this has obviously really resonated with a whole section of the population. Frankly, I am really impressed with the cookbooks that have come out on the vegan. I mean, these people are really, really creative. Now, I notice some things I make are naturally like that. I'm not a vegetarian, but I do eat vegetarian. This is, frankly, becoming more and more prevalent, I think. People are just shifting away, hey, what can I eat that's going to satisfy me? And beans and rice work. And then, of course, in the last 10 years, the diabetic foods and the alternative foods, rice cheese is fabulous. Not all brands, but most of it. And so you're able to eat non-dairy and not even feel the space. I mean, there's soy sour cream that's delicious, soy cream cheeses. I mean, these, you don't even miss it. It's delicious. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I used to miss, you know, things like ice cream and things of that nature. I never missed the meat. I did never really miss the eggs other than, you know, when you would go to want a cake or something of that
uh-huh.
nature.
Even now they have egg replacers that, you know, you put water in the vegetarian egg replacers and you can still make the cake.
Energy is a good one, and
yes,
I've used
excellent.
That to make cakes with, and they turn out, you know, fabulous. There's a lot of foods that I don't notice are vegan. Anyway, so in your cookbooks, have you ever done a vegetarian cookbook? Or
you know, I haven't, but no one will buy a vegetarian cookbook from me because I'm not slotted as a vegetarian author. Can you imagine?
So I decided
what I would like to do. I'm just setting up my website now, and I thought, I'm going to put a vegetarian section.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
So do they have the webpage on WILL's website then?
I don't know that Beth is it up and running, Beth?
It's not. I'm working on it right now. It'll be BethHensperger.com and NotYourMother'sSlowCooker.com. But BethHensperger.com is coming.
Okay, good. Great.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of books to cover. You know, I'm on my 22nd book, so trying to figure out how to represent everything properly and not overwhelm everybody has been a little bit of work.
Right. That's something that I ought to look at more as slow cookers because it's so convenient.
Oh. Once you get that first, you know, when you first go to work with it, it's like you go, oh, my God, you know, because it's really easy to overcook things and maybe the wrong high and low, and because there's a technique to it. Once you get it, you're off and running. Fabulous for beans. Fabulous for stews.
Well, thank you very much for the topic, Beth.
And I look forward to seeing you online eventually.
Yes, I'll have to visit your website.
Yeah, it'll be up by, I think, summer.
Summer. Okay, excellent. I'll keep an eye out for that. Thank you very much for the program as well. I'm sorry, I can't think of your name, at the moderator's name at the moment.
Celeste,
yes. Celeste.
Think heavenly.
All right. All right, you ladies have a lovely afternoon and good day.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I have seen some vegan cookbooks come across my desk, and it's a matter of which one should we choose to invite the guest, to invite the author on.
Absolutely one of the surprises of the cookbook industry. I never expected that.
Yeah, because there, you think on the one hand there's so many limitations. On the other hand, as you said, Beth, there's so much creativity going on. There's a fellow who's written a vegan soul food cookbook.
Yes.
And it looks great.
Yeah, everybody's raving, even the New York Times, about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I
you
heard...
You know, one thing I want to bring up that's really important that the New York Times addressed not long ago, the food shows on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't usually watch them because I'm so busy. And a couple weeks ago, on a Saturday, I was working. By accident, I turned on public TV station, and it was Saturday, and it was all food shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I just left it on in the background. And first of all, I learned things, which was really interesting. But the food shows are contrived. You know, you don't really have the real time that it takes to prepare a dish. There's very few people that prepare it from front to back within that 30-minute slot, because it's very difficult. You know, because they kind of go, and let's bake this, and then, you know, you
presto,
fast forward. Also, their food comes out very perfect. This was something everybody loved about Julia Child. She allowed the mistakes.
Uh-huh.
If I ever went on food TV, I would allow the mistakes. Remember the two fat ladies?
Yes.
In Britain?
Yes.
They were hysterical. I mean, it was just, they were like wild in the kitchen. And they also allowed mistakes. Now, they cooked away because they were doing classic British cooking that we don't cook this way in America. So it was almost just entertaining from that point of view, and it was not a lot of things that I would make. But TV is TV. And I also knew this with the food photography, when they would do shortening instead of the ice cream so it wouldn't melt under the lights and things.
Mm.
And I really believe in representing food as it really is. The uneven crusts, and a lot of my recipes will say, this will become uneven, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people are so visually oriented and they want their food to look, it's just like people who want to all look like the supermodels. How many of them are in this world? 24 out of millions and millions of people. And homemade food is exactly that, homemade.
Yeah.
And it's there for taste and nutrition before looks.
Yeah.
And we have become obsessed with everything being perfect. Well, the definition of perfect is not that it has to look like there's no blemishes. You know, you go to cut a tomato. You've got a bad spot. What do you do with it? You know, you're not always going to have perfect produce, especially if you're eating organic or out of your garden.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just something to think of, that use the shows for inspiration. I think the shows have gotten a lot of people cooking who would never cook before.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't work, don't worry about it. Go on and either try it again and adapt it.
Mm-hmm.
Even my books, if you make something and you don't like it, change it.
Yeah.
These are not Bibles.
Yeah.
Written in stone. This, once you get my book, it becomes yours. Write on the pages, change things. If you like a different flavoring, go for it. Let cooking be that level. That's the artistic level Adele Davis was talking about. Let yourself play. And the people who do that really enjoy their time in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Rather than be a slave.
I think it's interesting that online you'll see people commenting on recipes, say at myrecipes.com.
I love these little blog things.
Yes, and they say, well, this was terrific, but, you know, we changed it around a little bit, but this is a keeper, or, you know.
Yes. I love those. Yeah. I didn't used to read them. Now I'll read the recipe. I spend more time with the blogs. I think it's so fascinating. And then somebody will say, oh, I make this, and it's a better recipe, you know, and it's just some kind of hacked out little list. And you're getting the realistic element. And
mm-hmm.
I love, you know, I'm a communications person. I mean, obviously with writing, you know, communicating to these people that I will never meet, and yet I'm affecting their lives.
Mm.
And, of course, they're affecting my life, too, in mm-hmm. an indirect way. And here on the Internet, we've really become a global society. Some people that blog are blogging from Norway and Russia and Australia. And really, the Internet gave us this capacity to interact with people all over the world with similar interests that
yeah.
we have. It's really because food people, you know, being in food and interviewing food, and I worked in restaurants as well, food people are so wonderful. There's rarely somebody that's not wonderful. They all have this nourishing Mother Earth energy because that's what goes into food. I love, like, this Gordon Ramsay on TV. Because, you know, they get these reputations because they're so kind of the bad guy and yelling. That's really typical in a kitchen. You have very temperamental chefs, especially if they've risen pretty high up, because they work so hard. And they're not just yelling at somebody. They're just letting off steam, you know, because they expect so much from themselves. And I've worked with so many people like that, and I've also been like that. There's days, especially catering, and you have a staff of 15 and 200
oh.
people showing up, and, you know, somebody's not doing what they're supposed to do, and the next thing you know, you've snapped, and then you have to go apologize. Hopefully you have a good manager who smooths everything over, who understands. But Gordon Ramsay, if you look at him, he's not a bad person. He's a wonderful person with heart. His recipes are wonderful, and the people that work with him flourish. And those are the things you want to look at when you're looking at personalities. Because, so, you know, a lot of people come on TV and they're all smiles, and they're not like that in life.
mm.
But most all of the food people I meet, you know, IACP, you know, where people get together, all the food people, you couldn't have the food photographers, the stylists, you know, because every book, it's not just me. It's a whole team.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting a huge amount of input from all sorts of people behind my name because mm-hmm. I don't work in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very, very lucky, Celeste, because my work is what I love.
Mm.
And I've really, and I think that's why they've hit a mark with people, because it's practical, it's things that people can use, And there's that invisible energy.
Mm-hmm.
Just like your name, Celeste. Heavenly.
Well,
because food is something. Growing food, shopping for food, preparing food. We're never going to be free from this as long as we're alive.
Mm.
You've got to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing, I mean, when going back to Adele Davis about the pleasures of food and preparing it for another person, preparing it for yourself, sitting down, taking the time, enjoying it. It's we have to do it. We have to do it several times a day, and we should enjoy it.
There's one other genre of cookbooks that I notice are coming up.
Yeah?
These cancer cookbooks. The ones designed for people recovering from cancer.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. I mean, I've picked up now three of them that are like my favorite books. They have excellent recipes. They are still the guidelines for eating healthy and very, very creative. Beautiful, beautiful books. I just picked up one from 10 Speed Press. I think it's called One Bite at a Time. And it's by a private chef who cooks for cancer patients. It's a fabulous book.
Hmm.
Absolutely. And then there's the Cancer Lifeline book. That's also another one of my favorites. So, you know, inspiration can come from anywhere.
Yeah. We got to wrap up pretty soon here, Beth. And I thought maybe to wrap up this afternoon, you would share something from the book and maybe something that we might make here in Illinois, in central Illinois, eastern.
Well, first of all, anything piccata.
Okay.
And that's a squeeze of lemon, little chicken broth, little knob of butter, some capers, and then whatever. And you can do
chicken.
Pounded meat, mm-hmm. chicken. I love those turkey cut of the slices of the turkey that are off the breast. They're one of the hardest things. I mean, I used to look at them and go, what the heck do you do with them? Because if you just throw them in the pan and you're not paying attention, you get like a little piece of leather.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. I meant to ask you about this. There's a recipe in your book for turkey tenderloin.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it in the store, but I haven't purchased it because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not sure how to prepare it.
Use that recipe. You'll like it.
It's so easy. And
it cooks so fast.
Yeah, let me see it here.
And if you have leftover, then you can make your turkey cob.
That's what you're having tonight, that Cobb salad.
That's right. I got the turkey Cobb thing. I am a Cobb salad connoisseur. I will eat it anywhere. I've had it from the very basic to all gourmet items, you know, with the farmstead bacon and, you know.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. And every rendition I love.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
Well, the turkey tenderloin with citrus wine sauce is definitely, it looks like a keeper. I can't wait to try it out.
The other thing that I really love is making the hot turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
Or
a cold turkey sandwich.
Yeah, but in the book is the hot turkey sandwich, and then you use this breast slice, cook it very, very quickly, and then build your sandwich. Because it used to be that only at Thanksgiving, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, we only had turkey at Thanksgiving. We never had it all through the year.
Yeah.
We have to bless the turkey industry for, you know, turkey parts and ground turkey, which is pretty new in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
If you think about it, we didn't used to have turkey. Now you can have turkey every week.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the most wonderful tasting foods, but we used to look forward to that at Thanksgiving because we never had it any other time.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, there was no such thing as ground turkey.
No. And there was only one kind of lettuce in the supermarket,
oh,
and
there
was only one kind of tomato in the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So, yeah.
And we did well, because look at, you know, here we are.
Here we are.
Crowded.
Yep. Yep. And your mom was a good cook, and my mom was a good cook. So.
Oh, gosh, I just don't. I mean, you think it's invisible. You just expected it, you know, when you were a kid, because that's what was going on. Now I look back and I go, gosh, what a special part of my life, you know, and also to be able to appreciate her for instilling that in me.
Yeah.
You know, because usually we just do a mommy dearest, you know. We tend to, the human mind tends to focus on what's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Man bites dog. Yeah.
Well, man can just bite a hot turkey sandwich out of
and sit down at the table and set the table. And as your mom would suggest, set the table, sit down, and enjoy yourself.
And be civilized.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Beth, thank you so much for talking with
pleasure.
Me this afternoon.
Love NPR.
Okay. Take care, and I hope the heat breaks soon.
It will.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Beth Hensberger is the author of more than one dozen cookbooks. I can't remember now how many books she said, 20-some books. The books that I counted up, I came up with maybe 16. Anyway, the latest one is Not Your Mother's Weeknight Cooking, Quick and Easy, Wholesome Homemade Dinners. The book is published by the Harvard Common Press.